Okay, we should introduce this. So no! We're talking about Jurassic World, the shit, the thing.
the Fallen Kingdom, in which there were indeed no wizards.
No wizards. Almost no dinosaurs.
Almost no dinosaurs. So, first, The Meg is the most awesome movie I've ever seen, and I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, hell yes. I didn't get that in the previews at the cinema, but
you shared the trailer with me, but holy shit, seeing it in the movie theater, it was epic.
Yeah, I need to see that film.
Yeah, so badly. And the use of Bobby Darin was perfect.
Apparently the author is a bit of a dick, so I'm going to feel guilty while I watch it for supporting an author, but it's Jason Statham versus a really fucking big shark.
Yeah, no, we're totally watching that. And then, did you get the Die Hard reboot with The Rock?
Oh, God, yes. That was awful. And I love The Rock.
I know, but I'm also dying to see it. I'm like, it's so ridiculous. You know, how did you get in here? I jumped off a really big crane or whatever that was. It's just so bad. I just felt like if I could throw my money at the movie screen while these previews were playing.
It does feel though that's an ableism controversy waiting to happen in the current climate.
Also, I start cracking up because I'm an asshole, right? So the first scene we see The Rock with, you know, he's missing the lower part of his leg and he has a prosthetic. And so the first dialogue line of that trailer is, "Do you ever miss it?" And he answers about his gun, okay? And I'm like, I turned and I'm like, I thought they were talking about his leg. Like, what else what were you setting us up for if not that? I'm eager to see both of those. I shouldn't be. I admit this.
I'm down for one of them. I think the other one, as much as I love The Rock, it was just too...
Oh, it's too much. Absolutely.
Too much.
Yeah.
If it had a giant shark in it, then
yeah,
maybe.
Exactly. Okay, so now to Fallen Kingdom. And again, we have to go through this like shot by shot. So you said you loved the first 2 to 4 minutes, and I actually thought they messed it up.
I love the intro, the bit when they're stealing the thing, and there's the guy, and
it's
there's the T-Rex,
so close.
And there's the helicopter, and it's just...
It's so close.
Because at that point, I was thinking, I'm in for a really, really dumb, fun film.
Okay, so here's where I thought they messed up, and this is actually something that they did wrong in the last movie, that they actually corrected in the last 30 minutes of this one. You have none of that suspense, you know... The brilliance of the original Jurassic Park is like that we don't see the T-Rex for how long. I mean, it's the Steven Spielberg, you know, you don't see the shark for how, you know. I would not have shown the aquatic dinosaur. I think that was tipping the hand. So I would have had total quiet because they didn't, you know, the people in the submersible didn't really, they, you know, we saw it as the audience behind, but they didn't see it. So I would have let that tension build underwater. Oh, they're all dead. Of course, they're all dead, blah, blah. Meanwhile, the guy on the land, you see the flashes of the T-Rex. He's got to go for it, right? So we see none of that until the helicopter flies over the water. And you know what I would have done? I would have had that aquatic dinosaur jump out of the water and take the whole helicopter. Like, I just felt like they tipped the hand too much. Like, we saw the shadow of that. We saw the shadow of the T-Rex. We knew exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah, but that's kind of what I liked, is at this point, I was in for basically a dinosaur version of the Meg. Yeah. I was thinking, this is dumb, it's stupid, but it's going to be fun. But then it stopped being one
because
of those
they,
things.
Okay, opening scene, yes, we'll keep that. I'm going to go with you on that. We keep that. But then we need nothing until she meets Lockwood at the mansion. because there is a volcano on the island. It's about to erupt. The dinosaurs are going to die. We do not need that to be a political issue. We don't need that stance. We don't need any of that backstory. We just need her to be brought into that mansion and they go, hey, we got a way to get these dinosaurs off the island. Do you want in?
Yep.
Yes or no?
And then she says, do you have a daughter? And he says, it's not a clone.
Yeah. Which, again, we're going to get to that. That was not necessary. Because that little girl would have pushed that fucking button either way.
Had she was only there to force the moral issue that they'd ham-fisted.
Right?
That was the only reason she was a clone.
Yeah, that didn't... You had the one line to set it up and the one line at the end to close it off, tie it up, right, as a bow. Push the button, say the words. And I think that... her character was just fine. And she was a good little actress. And I think, like, just based... taking out the clone thing, she would have pushed that button anyway, right? She loves dinosaurs. She's young, idealistic, which is what they established with, what's his name, Mills. You know, I was young and idealistic once. They actually didn't need her to be the clone to push the button.
And right back to the start, where I realized this was starting to go wrong. For some reason, the character that Jeff Goldblum is playing at the start of this film isn't Ian Malcolm.
Nope.
Because the speech he's giving at the start of the film isn't what Ian Malcolm would say.
No. Although, I have to say, it is closer to the beginning of the book Lost World.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember it that well.
Okay. He's reversed all of his stances. Like, he's like, you know, in book two. So there's a little bit of that there, but still, it wasn't. And also, who the hell is the John Hammond that they're talking about throughout this entire movie? Because it's not the John Hammond I know.
Nope.
I mean, I think we established very strongly in the first film that it was about, you know, yes, there was this little bit of childish dream that he had, but it was mostly a money-making scheme.
Yeah, there's the whole nice thing about the flea circus.
Which is, oh my God, I was thinking about this so much yesterday because it's front-loaded with backstory in this movie. The only backstory that we have in the initial movie is that moment about the flea circus. There's that pause in the middle of, you know, they don't know if their family and friends are alive or dead. And they're sitting there and he just kind of bares his soul. You know, it's all about the illusion. You know, it was a flea circus and it's about what you believe. And that was very affecting for a dinosaur adventure movie in that moment. And they forced it on us in that, you know, political ranty thing. And it was completely unnecessary. And it wasn't natural to the story, the characters, or the plot.
Nope.
And since we're on natural two things, what was up with the accents?
Well, I think that's baked into Jurassic World Park anyway. Because, you know, Hammond's accent in the first film is a work of, well, it's certainly a something.
Scottish, but Lockwood
sometimes,
didn't
he's English
have
sometimes, you know. No, that's true.
Okay, and then the Mrs. Danvers tries to get the clone to speak in, you know, the Queen's English. But why? No one else around there seems to be British.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so it just struck me as very strange.
This film, it's like, if you're going to have a film and then you tease that you're going to go with a certain trope and then you completely subvert it, that's fun. But this film, it's like, there are times when you thought it was setting something up, like you're like, oh, the old man's going to turn out to be evil, that's obvious. And then it turns out he isn't evil, but, well, he can't, well, in a way, but,
okay,
but instead
also...
of, but then they just do something boring with it when they subvert it. There's no, oh my God, you did something interesting. It's, oh no, he's not, oh, he's dead. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's gone. But also... I mean, this man is... One of the things I actually loved about this movie was the obvious nature of what was going to happen. Once they established, like, in that initial scene where I said, I would have done this differently, you can't actually be disappointed, Jay, because they set everything up like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the, okay, we saw the dinosaurs coming, the dinosaurs kill the things. And you're like, oh, I thought it was going to be over the top. You know, well, it kind of was. Because who calls, you know, the guy that is probably embezzling money from your billion-dollar corporation into a room alone and then is like, hey, you want to call the cops on yourself? That's going to work, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't fun in a dumb way. It was just dumb.
But it was
boring in parts.
Okay, that's very true. But then, so we're going in order. That was my rule, so I should stick to it.
So then they get to the island.
Firstly,
the comedy relief guy on the island spends the whole time not wanting to be around dinosaurs. Why the fuck did you go to the island?
Because he's the IT guy.
They couldn't find another IT guy?
I don't know.
This film is full of that.
When
they're on the boat afterwards
are.
And she's like, okay, we need to... But the thing is, the one good one isn't, really.
Yeah,
Jurassic Park isn't. And then all of the shit ones are.
Well, actually, I will almost disagree with you on that, because even the first one kind of is. But there's the sense of fun, and there's the sense of wonder, and the suspense is there that we don't care as much how flawed the characters are and how much each one of them is a ridiculous trope. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I've gone into the Ellie and how, you know, in the book, she isn't dating Alan Grant, and, you know, she's a career woman, and they've changed her into, this is my boyfriend and I want you to sit with the kids because I want kids. Yeah. It becomes the female trope. There's nothing more cliche than that. But the suspense was so good and the setups were so good, we didn't care.
Also, there's a sense of wonder in that film, you said. Like,
yeah.
There's the wonderful shot that where the first time they see the
dinosaur.
Oh my God,
and the music. They used the music so poorly in this. I kept waiting for it.
In the first film, the sense of awe, it's what sells that isn't the CGI dinosaur that a bunch of us were seeing for the first time of the right generation. It was the sense of wonder on the faces, actors.
And the music.
And the sense of wonder in this film is when Claire gets out of a car and looks up at a big house.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they match that shot, and they do the same thing. And you're like, why? She's seen big houses before. Why is she full of wonder at a big house?
Right. So now we're on the island. And again, you know, I'll go back to my old theory of, you know, Jurassic World, it's the protagonist is Blue. So I feel like this should be like The Quest to Save Blue is the subtitle, not The Fallen Kingdom. Because Blue, again, comes back as the protagonist in this movie. But
or Blue's Kingdom.
Blue's Kingdom. Blue's Clues.
Blue's Clues.
So we're on the island.
So we're on the island, and immediately, within 2 minutes, basically, of screen time, the people are revealed to be villains with
no real...
Like, oh my God, I did not see that coming.
Right. But then
level of forethought would have gone into being able to trap Claire and Tech Guy in that room while a volcano explodes? I mean, that was something they must have planned. So they've gone to an island thinking, we're going to get these people into this room, and then we're going to trap them under a volcano. What?
They needed her to track Blue. So I'm with them to that point. But then I don't quite know how they closed the doors, because they had none of the IT mojo, which is why we brought, you know, the nerd to the island, right?
Yeah, the guy who now can't reopen them, who opened them in the first place.
Yeah. Well, things happen, you know? So that didn't make all that much sense, but then we get out, and there's absolutely no way everybody doesn't die in that stampede.
Oh, no,
none.
Totally. Here's one of my biggest bugbears of all of the sequels. In the first film, they quite clearly say how fast a T-Rex can run.
Uh-huh.
And it is quite clearly faster than any human can run.
Right.
It's 30 miles an hour, I think they say they clock it in at. And in the first film, I have issues that the first film breaks a few of its own rules, but in the first film, to get away from a T-Rex, you have to be in a car.
Right.
Or the van. And then it feels like in every sequel since, there's been a moment when a human outruns a dinosaur. And bullshit. That's my considered opinion.
But also, I mean, if you've ever been in or near or read about large animals stampeding, like that's not a thing. There's a level of panic, you know, when horses run away from a fire, that sort of thing. There's no way everybody there didn't get trampled.
Mm-hmm.
None. And there's also no way that once they got that hamster ball closed, that they got it reopened. Okay?
It felt a little bit like, and I haven't seen The Last Jedi, but I know that there's part of the thing in that is that I understand that the director was building in a message about you have to kill the past to move on, that maybe was a bit of a dig at certain elements of the fan base, right or wrong, you know. But then in this film, there's moments when, like, there's the upside down car from Jurassic Park is in it, and then you see the lava racing towards it, and it just but because I don't care about this film, it just felt like it was being a dick the whole film. It was like, haha, here's this other film that was good, we're gonna destroy it with lava. And it just felt weird.
I agree with that until we get to the end, which we haven't gotten to yet. So pausing my coherent thoughts as a whole, or cohesive thoughts as a whole, but both apply. So we're still on the island. So now they get off the island, which she escapes, you know, because she puts on a hat so you can't see her. But I almost got up and walked out with the lone brontosaur on the dock. Like, that was... Don't do that! I think every pet owner...
Yeah, every pet owner watching that film had a moment at that bit, I think.
Oh, that was horrible! Like, yeah. I was kind of cool with, like, okay, so they weren't supposed to be alive to begin with, and, you know, if the volcano destroys them, how are you going to get all of those, like, logistically off the island, blah, 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 until the one lonely one is crying. Like, go back, help it. So they almost lost me there, literally by me leaving the theater.
Mm-hmm. I was coming out of the film bit by bit.
Yeah.
And then I was completely out of the film shortly after that, just because of just such a dumb moment that they didn't... They went for a joke, I think, that then just ruined the whole logic of... It just ruined the moment. So the vet is like, Blue needs a blood transfusion. It needs to be this kind of dinosaur with this many digits. And,
which,
oh, by the way...
Again, doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. But she's like, there is one.
She was awesome, but it doesn't make sense.
Sends them round to the trailer where the T-Rex is, and they open the door, and Claire's like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. And I'm thinking, so right, the vet sent them to get blood from a T-Rex, but didn't tell them that they were getting blood from a T-Rex? Are we expected to believe that in the moment just so that we can have a fun beat with Claire opening the door? And at that point, I was just like, I'm done. I'm completely done.
Yeah.
But I paid for this film, so I've got to sit here for another 2 hours.
Of course. So basically, I hated this movie up until, weirdly, they get back to the mansion, where you call it, you know, dinosaurs in the basement.
Yeah.
And then I get weirdly reinvested because it gets so bad that it circles back around. Okay? Like, I'm not saying at any point that this is a good movie, but it became so ridiculous and over the top and the tropes. And I actually thought, you know how we felt in the first three quarters, that they were just showing us the parallels with the first film to be like, look how much better that one was. Mm-hmm. I actually appreciated the parallels in the latter third. Like when the little girl goes into the dumbwaiter and has to pull the thing down.
Yeah.
Which is just like, you know, in the kitchen in the initial movie. And I was just like there were moments where I'm like, it became more of an homage in the last third, as opposed to this, like, let me show you what we're ruining of the first two thirds.
The trouble I had with that moment was, because it was fun right up until, like, the payoff when the dinosaur can't get her. And in Jurassic Park, it makes sense because the Velociraptor hits
its
head on metal.
It makes no sense in this movie because he's just crashed through every single wall and thing,
right,
and metal bars, and he can't
really
go through it, like,
wood.
Really thin. Yes, I thought the same thing.
What's happening? What I do think is good in the house bit is that I think the director is a better director than Colin Trevorrow. Mm-hmm. So I think he's full of visual ideas. And I think that once it gets into the house and he plays with reflections and shadows and things like that, and he kind of plays up to his horror director roots, there's some really nice images
that are actually
way better than the story that they're in.
Yes, and I think there's a level of suspense almost despite itself that's built once they introduce the Indoraptor, which is stupid, right? It's the dumbest thing ever. And, like, even with the scene where, like, it's basically winking at the audience, Like, this is kind of when I came back in, because I'm like, oh my God, they just don't care now. Like, the tail raises, it winks. I'm like, come on.
So the hunter guy who gets killed by the
Oh my God, and he walks into that cage, and everybody, the theater was basically full. And every single person goes, oh, come on, like really loudly.
But also, why does he do it? Because he's a hunter. He's going to collect trophies from things he's hunted. Yeah. He hasn't hunted this.
No. But
there's no reason for him to collect the trophy.
At this point, I've just bought into the fact that this is a bad movie. Okay. So my tide has turned, because before, they've actually stopped. Like, first two-thirds, they're trying. They have a moral, you know, do we kill these animals? There's this, you know, genetic argument, scientific argument. How do we get them off the island? They're bad guys. Are we saving the people? You know, they try for a story. They don't succeed, but they try for a story. This part, once they get to the house, they're like, all bets are off. We're just putting people in situations. No apparent reason, no rhyme, no thing. We're just doing what we want.
It felt like they were in Wayne Manor. I mean, why is there such a big facility underground?
Oh, also, that makes no sense. Why did you need that whole room with the, like, I'm now calling it the Dino Walk, by the way, because it's basically a fashion show catwalk, right? The auction, you know, they roll the creature in, they roll the creature out. They did not need to spend I don't know how many millions on that facility to do that. They could have had, I don't know, a screen to the basement where they're in cages.
Yeah.
Like, none of that was necessary.
This also gets to a problem I have with both of the Jurassic World films now. The whole premise of the last two films, really, is that after a while of seeing dinosaurs, we get bored of seeing dinosaurs, and they start making new dinosaurs in a parallel to how we are with cinema, the fact that Hollywood is constantly trying to find a new thing. But Hollywood isn't dinosaurs. And Disney World's attendance doesn't go down. People still like going to Disney World. And that's just men in suits and roller coasters. But we're expected to believe that for some reason, you know, after 5 years of seeing T-Rexes and all the other things, we're just all going to go, yeah, we're bored of dinosaurs now. Of course we're not. They're fucking dinosaurs. We all want to go and see them.
Okay, so there are 2 points, and I think you are conflating them when they should be separate. I think that the writers feel that's true of the viewer, but in the second film, that's not true of the people in that world, because they're only making Indoraptor in order to have a war. You know, it's the nuclear weapon of the next generation, right? They found all of the best characteristics of all the most vicious dinosaurs, and they put them together. So it's really not, hey, we need a new thing. It's more like, what can we sell? But I think they feel that the audience needs these new dinosaurs, which is just stupid, because there's millions of dinosaurs that they didn't put in Jurassic Park that we would love to see. So I agree with you in the last movie, not necessarily in this movie. But speaking of this point, and we talk about money and stakes a lot, right? Those dinosaurs were cheap. Like, that did
for the money they went for in the auction.
This is like a third of what they're worth.
Yeah.
At least. I mean, I've never sold a dinosaur, so I guess I'm really just talking out of my ass here.
Well, it was really funny for me, because my football team, we're in the close season in football while the World Cup's on. And so we're getting the rumors about which players my team is going to be buying. And figures being thrown around are like 18 million, 25
right.
million,
30
million.
And the dinosaurs million. Are going for less than this.
Yeah, I was like, so our new goalkeeper is going to cost more than a Stegosaurus? That's not right.
No. And also, of course, you know, like I said, all bets were off. They didn't even bother. Because finally, Henry Wu goes, you know, well, they're going to make more or something, right? Because you've given them the Indorex. So, of course, they can just, you know, reverse engineer that technology. They don't need more than one, right? But the same is true for all of the other dinosaurs. It's like, you didn't think about this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you've had this auction, you've basically ended your monetary career, because when you put those things out there for other people, they're going to reverse engineer them, and then they don't need you anymore.
Yeah.
So it was.
And when obviously evil Rafe Spall is trying to talk Toby Jones into doing the thing, and he's like, and Toby Jones
Which
is like, you know, I don't need this.
Sense.
I make money.
There was no point to that scene.
They didn't
either.
Need him. They didn't need him. But then they're like, he's like, but have you ever made $100 million on a Tuesday? And I'm just sort of thinking, yeah, he probably has if he's at that level.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you sell one, you know, virus. You sell one. That's the level of money we're talking about for one thing. Why does he need $100 million? It sounds like they have plenty of money, right?
Yep.
So it would have been a much better movie. It would have actually been a decent to fun movie if you had removed all of the backstory from it. It was the backstory that ruined this.
I think they should have. It's a problem with Jurassic World, is that they could have gone two different ways, and they went the wrong way. So with Jurassic World, they could have had a story. They could have played with the Vincent D'Onofrio's character, the whole subplot that then follows through into the second one of the military DNA thing. There could have been a really cool film about Claire's character being brainy and figuring out this was going on, and then all shit breaks loose, and the dinosaurs are loose for that reason, because she's figured out the military thing, and the military thing goes wrong, and there's a really cool thriller in that with dinosaurs in it.
Right.
And then with this film, you either have the film with the moral issue about going to the island and having an adventure about which ones can you save and which ones can't you save, and then the island blows up. Or you cut straight from the opening when they're stealing bits to this genetic stuff and the auction, and then run with that and have fun with that, and have that very early in the film, have the house be the middle of the film, and then just have fun with the final third of the film with dinosaurs on the loose and shit happening.
Yeah,
and
no, both they've combined times, they go too the many wrong way. Things. Well, it's too much. There's two movies there. You're absolutely right. And we don't need, and they wasted. Apparently, the initial cut was 2 hours and 40 minutes. And to me, you could have really easily gotten at least another 30 to 40 minutes out of that movie with eliminating, you know, we didn't need any of their campaign work. We didn't need the thing in the, you know, Congress. We didn't need all of the stuff with the auction. You know, just get there and have fun with the dinosaurs. Mm-hmm.
I could even in terms of cutting out stuff, I would maybe keep the scene of Owen and Claire in the bar. That could be the first time you see
them.
Oh,
that was great.
Because that's like, you know, just have her be there. I'm putting together a team and start from there.
Yeah.
You know.
And if we, I actually think it would be very easy to cut this and make it a fun movie. Because like I said, once you get to the house and all bets are off, and it was very, I mean, it wasn't as good by any means as the first film, but it was very reminiscent of a lot of those sequences, and I did feel more suspense once we got to that point. And you know, I saw Infinity War in the theater, as did you, and I don't know how your experience was, but when Blue pushed, you know, fell off the roof with the Indoraptor and managed to, you know, position herself on top so that it was skewered and she was not, and she was standing on top of it, the entire audience cheered and clapped.
No, I think we were all done by that point.
No, we were all reinvested, because we're like, okay, we're in this for the long haul. All bets are off. We're back in. And I can tell you that there was no reaction in any way to Infinity War, which is what everyone's talking about. And I'm like, because at a point when the all bets were off things started to happen once they got back to the house, it almost became fun again. Because it was more like, okay, you know, let's have the dinosaur use its head to break through the wall. There was that level of humor and self-deprecation, but also there are stakes here that didn't exist for the first two-thirds of the movie. Which is why I feel, and I'm sorry it lost you to that point, because I think, like I said, if we recut that, so it was just like we're putting the team together, you know, we get off the island, then, you know, we're at the mansion faster, you wouldn't have gotten so bored and so out of it with all of their ridiculous moral posturing. And would have
also, why are Claire and Owen in that cage? Why are they not dead?
Does it matter? Like, that's why I said all bets are off. Like, you can't start to analyze any part of this. Like,
I mean, the thing is, they're willing to drop a volcano on them, mm-hmm. but they're not willing to put a bullet in their heads.
Yeah.
I just don't get it.
No, I completely agree. But then you're using analysis that, like, I give it to you for the first two thirds because they kept trying to have a story, right? So I'll go, okay, so you've got these parameters. This makes sense. This doesn't make sense within the world you've created. Again, all bets are off. There's no reason for that great white hunter to walk into that cage.
Absolutely not.
No. But then, you know, it's just, oh, come on. Like, that's what the whole audience said. And then he gets bitten, you know, in half, and we all cheer because it's just so dumb. They're not trying anymore. And so I shut off the part of the, does this go with the parameters of the world they've created story analysis and just go, okay, now I'm just going to watch this. Because at least we have dinosaurs ripping people to pieces, which is kind of what I go to a dinosaur movie for. And there was very little of that in this movie.
Yeah, there was almost none.
Yeah, it was not violent, like, at all.
If you're going to make a fun dinosaur movie, make a fun dinosaur movie.
Right? Which is, again, why I kind of liked, you know. And then we have realized why I liked it when we got back to the house. It was Blue's movie again.
That was totally Blue's movie.
Yeah. So I'm ignoring the people in the cage and the this we have to do and that we have to do. I'm watching Blue and going, okay, so now we've got the Blue's film. And we have a protagonist that I can get behind. Then they almost lost me again, because as much as I knew that that little girl was going to push the button, watching those dinosaurs be slowly gassed
mm-hmm.
was killing me. Like, I did not think that I would have that level of emotion to this shit movie, right? And I'm going, you've got to let them out. I don't care if they, you can't do that. Don't you see they're suffering? Like, I was going, you can't have that kind of, like, random, we've just had fun, you know, that makes no sense for the last 30 minutes here. And then suddenly we bring back in the, you know, do we keep them alive? Do we kill them? Sort of issue. And I'm going, oh, shit, I can't, no, you can't bring this back down. Like I said, despite knowing, I was certain the minute we got into that, the minute I saw that button, I didn't even know what it did when I saw the button, but when there's a big red button, you know, you have thoughts.
It's going to be pressed.
Right? And I knew it was going to be the little girl who pressed it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you walked into that room, there was no chance anything was going to go any other way. But I was still going, no, don't, you know, don't, just don't free them from their cage just to gas them en masse, like...
Now, if Ian Malcolm had just run in from nowhere in that moment, pressed the button,
perfect.
And gone, ah, life finds a way, and run out of the room again, I'd have been in.
Okay, but short of that, that's almost what that movie did. I can't say the all bets were off thing enough, because they were, like, none of it. They telegraphed everything, and then mm-hmm. they just went, oh, screw it, we don't care. We want a scene where, you know, the dinosaur with the thick skull breaks a wall down. We want a scene where, you know, and I loved Mills under the car, because that was, again, you know, that was a reminiscent of, that was a callback. You know, the last third of that movie was all callbacks. And I
love his plan there, his lack of plan. I'm going to hide under this metal thing.
Right? So none of it made sense. And I'd love to watch it again and just fast forward. Like, do my own cut here. And see if I'm right. Like,
all along with all of these films, apart from the first one, I've said, right, the next step is play with dinosaurs being out in the world.
I know.
And so at the end of this film, they're finally getting to that. What I don't understand is why Colin Trevorrow or the producers or whoever made this decision has thought you need a trilogy to get to that point. All you ever needed to do was get straight to that point,
well,
because
actually,
we already know there
are
dinosaurs.
And they did get to that point. And also, speaking of rules of the world, I'm watching all of the air bound dinosaurs, because they're not pterodactyls. They're what, pterosaurs? I forget what they, what dinosaur they have, but it's not like they wouldn't have migrated. You know, that they're flying all around, and I'm going, guys, it's not like an island off the coast of Costa Rica is far
from Costa Rica. Yeah, those things are already out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Those things are already out there.
I know. And so I'm going, that shouldn't be a thing that we don't know about, which is why setting up that whole do we protect this, do we not protect it, didn't make any sense. Why I was angry in the first part of the movie, because after that horrific disaster, there would have probably, that would have been when there was legislation, that would have been, you know, do we keep the dinosaurs there? Is it a protected area? You know, what do we do? They obviously went back to get the bodies, because we saw no dead people when they went back to the island. So something, a lot went on prior to that point. So either you should have shown us that, not created this like fake bridge to get us back onto the island.
Well, you start your opening scene is some normal criminals in a normal place doing some normal crime and kind of in a rush, and they've got to get away from somewhere, and then oh shit, there's a dinosaur breaks in and kills them. And then you cut to things at Congress going, oh well, so there are dinosaurs out in the world now, so we have to decide whether they're protected or whether we can just kill them. We have to decide what we do with that problem.
Exactly.
And that would make sense, and then you'd have 3 hours of fun of dinosaurs in the real world. Just
which
make that
I think
film.
Is
I mean,
going to be movie
I think
three.
They will now.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they
you
also...
didn't need two movies to get them. So the third one, is it going to be like... Blue's going to be like this old grizzled Charlton Heston type character who just turns
she's,
up
she's
in
retired
the final
on
third,
a farm.
wearing a cape and a hood and just wanders in. And there's maybe there's long hair maybe from somewhere, you know, and then just walks into the final third of the movie to save the day and look a bit grumpy and then wander off again.
Yeah. But also, you know, the funny thing is, they set all of this up already with, which one of the sequels was it? It was the one with Julianne Moore.
It was the second one.
Okay.
Lost World.
Right. So that was where the T-Rex goes nuts on basically Disneyland, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Attacks San Diego. Really weird.
As you do. So it's not like they jumped the shark, you know, recently. And the clone thing was pointless. Like, it just really, it was like...
Ugh.
It was unnecessary.
If I would have liked all of these obvious reveals that they set up and then were obvious, it would almost have been worth them if then there was one that just, they were like, we've tricked you because there's one that comes in from nowhere.
Right.
And we've conditioned you to not expect it. And then you'd be like, oh my God, all of the others were worth it.
I don't know how you can be disappointed because the first scene set you up for all of this is always going to be telegraphed.
Yeah, but it was fun. First scene was just fun. It was stupid. It was...
Well, so was the rest of it.
It was the main.
It's unfortunate, like I said, this is why it's when they tried to do a story that they ruined it. They weren't trying... That first scene was just fun. The last, 30 minutes was just ridiculous and sort of fun. It was that from the government to the island where they tried to have a real story with real peril and real morals and subtext, that they ruined it. So if we take that out, we just have a fun movie. It might not be good, but it's fun. So
I think there's a secret story in this film.
Okay.
Because he says that his daughter died in a car accident. I think she fell off that balcony.
Right? Who puts the child in the room with the highest room with a unsecured balcony?
Right. It's insane.
I actually started laughing out loud because we don't know that that's, you know, we've seen the interior of her room, but never the exterior. So when she goes the first time on the balcony, I start cracking up. So does the rest of the audience. It's like, oh, come on. She's in the top turret of this tower. And she has free reign. Like, it's the wall around the balcony is not even that high. And she's obviously been in there since, you know, early childhood. So at any point, unsupervised, she could have fallen off the highest point of this. But I guess it didn't matter because they could just
She's
make
probably
her...
like the seventh version. Like,
right,
they
could just
they're
make
constantly
her again.
Like, we need another Timmy.
Yeah.
Over and over and over.
Because she keeps falling off the balcony.
Yeah.
So...
There's a graveyard at the back of the house that's all the same name.
Yeah. It's like my neighbors growing up, they always named the dog the same name. I'd be like, oh, you know, this one's a different color. Oh, it's Max too. I'm like, that was actually disturbing to me as a child. Like, oh, we can just replace it. It doesn't even really look the same, but we'll just call it the same name. But that was totally unnecessary. And the thing is that for that, I mean, it was all these side plots. Like, just honestly, take out every single side plot. You have a halfway decent film. And even with that side plot, which, I don't know, if you and I were writing it, it would probably be more than two lines. Like, we obviously got the point that he was hiding the pictures for a reason. But that actually didn't work out very well either, because I know people whose children look just like them as children, right?
Right. Like most people at that age kind of resemble their parents. Uh-huh.
So that was no big deal to me.
Yeah.
And then you have the first line from Mills, which is like, you don't know what she is. You know, he never had a granddaughter, which is totally dropped immediately. And then later on, she presses the button and goes, you know, I'm just like them, or whatever that line was. But that was the entire subplot, those two lines. You know,
yeah, you kind of, for a while, I mean, it was obvious she was a clone the whole time. The minute he mentioned the car crash, I'm like, she's a clone. We're in a film about genetic clones. She's a clone. But for a while, you kind of thought, oh, maybe they're setting up that the older woman is secretly the mother.
I thought that,
there's
too.
And this affair, and, you know, and that would have
exactly
been an interesting subplot.
But no, they had no, there was nothing to it. There were those two lines, and that's why I'm like, it made it worse. Which is kind of what we were talking about the other day with Tomb Raider. Because why can't a movie just be fun?
Yeah, just be fun.
Yeah, and I think they tried to make a story with Tomb Raider. And that's why it didn't work. You know, just
I blame Chris Nolan. It's probably completely unfair, but I blame
Chris
Nolan.
You might have a point, actually.
Because Batman Begins is fun. If you go back and rewatch it, it's actually a fun movie, and it wouldn't be out of place in the early stages of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's got jokes, it's fast, it's got a hero in it, and it's just a fun film. But you can see in that film the seeds of what he then took over into Dark Knight, which is a film that's universally loved but is actually pretty bad, apart from one amazing performance.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got all the, oh, this has to be real, this has to be real,
right?
This has to be real. No, it doesn't. It's a film about a man who dresses like a giant bat. Make it a bit realistic, but have fun.
Right. And so...
And now... Yeah.
Yeah, so same thing with Tomb Raider. It was all this angst. It's like the characters can't have fun, we can't have fun. And I think they kind of tried to do that with the dinosaurs, you know? The characters can't have fun, we can't have fun. There's this moral issue that we have to deal with. We can't just sit and watch dinosaurs. Because that would be fun.
And you can see it with James... Maybe it's Casino Royale that's to blame, actually. Because you can see it with James Bond. I really like Casino Royale.
I do too.
And again, I think that people took the wrong lessons from it, because there are good jokes in that film that get overlooked. And it's fun, it's got adventure, it's a good, thrilling film. But from there, Daniel Craig's James Bond became really, really dull and one note. And Skyfall was awful. But then Spectre was actually fun. And I think Spectre almost tried to be a Daniel Craig version of a Roger Moore film.
Right.
And it just tried to lean into, let's have a bit more fun. And then everyone hated that one. But the ones before it that I think are completely dull and boring are the ones that made all the money. So maybe Chris Nolan and James Bond aren't to blame. Maybe we're wrong.
No, we're not wrong. I mean, but I think to me that's, and of course you can have movies of every different shape, size, flavor, everything. But it's why I get mad at the Oscars so often, and why I was actually okay when Shape of Water won. Because that movie was
fish fucking.
Yes, well that too. You know, I'm always for that as a basic pescatarian. But it was a spectacle. Everything about that, the music, the cinematography, the colors, like everything was thought through. It was a fairy tale. It was, you know, every element of entertainment and spectacle and storytelling visually was involved there. That's why it won Best Picture. And so often these movies that have You know, it maybe ought to win best screenplay or best, you know, actor or best, but it shouldn't necessarily win best picture because it's more a thing that belongs on a page than a film spectacle of entertainment, if that makes mm-hmm. any sense whatsoever. Because we read books for that more than we watch a film. You know, we shut off a large part of ourselves when we watch a movie. We're just there to be entertained, be forced. You know, I watched a movie recently without a soundtrack, and I noticed it, and how much more relied upon the actors to emote and give us those cues as to what to feel. And think of horror movies particularly. Would they be as scary without that suspenseful soundtrack? Without that, right. You know, increasing, you know, it increases your heartbeat and you pay more attention and we're more scared by the music than we are what's going on the screen. Mm-hmm. So we have all of those cues. We get none of that from a book. We have to create a lot of that within us.
It was Reed Coleman, but I don't know whether this is a point that stayed in the episode or not, but way back in our very first episode, he says that when you're writing a book, if you're an author, you have to be good at lots of jobs.
Yeah.
Because you have to build all of that into the book. Whereas with a film, you bring in someone to do that. You bring in someone to do the score, to do the editing, to do to do all the stuff that an author's got to do on his own with some words on a page.
But also, I think the reader has to do it too. Like it's the author hand in hand there, whereas the viewer is led along. Mm-hmm. There's this gravitas that has to now be in everything. And I was talking to my friend Brian to weirdly circle this sideways about happiness. It was like yesterday. He's about to get a really great opportunity with his writing. You know, he pitched a thing. They bought it. He's waiting on the contract, and he let me know that, but he said, you know, I expect it to fall apart, blah, blah, blah. And I said, what the hell is wrong with our generation where we can't enjoy a thing? Like, we can't go, I'm really excited. And I said, you know, how much do we get to enjoy in life? Let's say it does fall apart. At least enjoy the possibility that you may have it until it A, falls apart, or B, is successful. But we have to Absolutely. Make that excuse. Like, oh, you know, this good thing is happening, or I might be really happy, but, you know, better watch myself lest I be happy. And I don't know what's up with that. And it's the same thing with the movies. We can't have fun. There has to be a moral in fucking Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, but even then, I think Spielberg's the best example, because with Spielberg films, before a certain point, you had fun.
Yeah.
There were morals, but they were in the subtext.
Oh, sure.
I mean, Jaws is full of subtext, but you can skip it if you want. Raiders, E.T., all of these films mm-hmm. that are brilliant and are fun and a genre, and there is a story there, there's a moral there, but it's also just it's okay to have fun. And then even Spielberg, past a certain point in Hollywood, it's like, yeah, you can't have fun now.
Right?
You've got to be... Got to be
so
worthy.
So what is the problem with fun? What is the problem with happiness? And I certainly know that I fall into all of these traps. You know me probably best of most people, and how often am I like, I'm really happy today. So it's not like I don't fall into it, but it also, you know, having issues with things like this, I recognize the value and how you can't push that away when it arises. You know, happiness is so rare, fun is so rare. Just, you know, you don't have to qualify it. So why do we?
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't have, because in the modern day, it's important that we talk about mental health issues. All of the memes on Facebook and Twitter about, you know, that it's okay to be struggling, and all of those things are important, and I agree with all of them, because we all go through it one way or another at some stage. But why aren't we also having memes that I think would be helpful of, do you know what, it's also okay to have a good time.
Yeah.
Because that's the balance. That's the, yes, we're all going to have problems, and people with real mental health issues get horrible problems and feel really down and need help. At the same time, there are days when you feel happy, and it's okay to embrace it. You don't have to feel guilty for it. Just embrace having a good time.
Yeah. No, there's that level of guilt that comes with happiness. And I think social media does have a large amount to do with you know, our daily mental health. And it's like, you can be happy, and then you go on and you see it might be somebody you don't even know, and something horrible that's happened in their life, and you go, oh, okay, I was having a good day, but now I feel guilty about that because look at what's happening over there.
Yep.
So like I don't go to Jurassic Park. Like, I got really mad at those two points in the movie because I don't go to that movie to basically watch animals die or make a choice as to whether a species lives, dies. Like, this is, I'm happy to think about these things. We could discuss this until the cows come home or the dinosaurs or the same cow comes home. But I...
Nice.
Thank you. But I don't really want to think about it then. You know, yes. I want to have fun. I think that's why I got so, like, it really... I rarely get emotional in movies. Well, I rarely get emotional just, you know, generally because I'm dead inside. But I was weirdly affected in both of those moments. The dinosaur on the dock, which I'll give anybody that has any level of soul, you know, obviously, or has a pet, that would just be horrible. But in the second part, you know, I knew the button was going to be pushed. I am a logical person. I'm a writer. I know how this is going to go. And yet I was sitting there going, I swear to God, if they kill those dinosaurs, I kind of went, I don't know what the world is anymore if there's a scene mm-hmm. like this in this movie. Like, it was a very strange dichotomy for me. It just didn't belong there. You know, it would be like, you know, dealing with some major issue, you know, of freedom or in a like Disney cartoon. You know what I'm saying? I didn't expect it there. And yeah. So it bothered me for some reason as a result.
Yeah, no, I agree. You can make that film and then you can let people know in advance that that's the film that you've made. Uh-huh. And then people can choose whether they want to go and take that on and watch that film. And, you know, half of the time I probably would.
Yeah.
Depends what mood I'm in. Or you make the other film and it's batshit and it's fun and it's crazy and it's full of dinosaurs doing dinosaur stuff.
Right? But I want dinosaurs doing dinosaur stuff.
Don't try
please.
And stitch the two together in a way that just doesn't work.
No, and that's why I was so thrown out of it. Because I wasn't anticipating it. I wasn't primed for it. I here comes the part of the podcast where I always say, I always teach my students. But I talk to them about, you know, priming your reader a lot. And it starts, you know, that's why in a query letter, in your first line you have, I have written an X, you know, number of words manuscript called this, it is this genre, right? Mm-hmm. Why do we need that? Because the next line when you have, you know, Jane's normal world, you know, blah, 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 and then aliens, right? If you think you're reading, I don't know, chick lit, which God forbid, and then suddenly there's an alien there, you're going to get mad because you weren't primed for the alien. If you know right. that it's sci-fi, you know, you could have that same opening sequence of, you know, Jane at her book club, which seems, you know, if you're not ready for the alien, like a chick lit setup, right? But if you know that it's sci-fi going in, when you see the alien, it's not going to be jarring. You're not going to be thrown out of the book, out of the movie, out of whatever it is.
Right.
And so it's a level of priming, which you do in the query letter. You do it, you know, in the book itself, because you never want to throw the reader, like, twists are fine. You know, you want to throw them for a loop. You just don't want to throw them out of the story. Where they go, right, oh, absolutely. Shit, what's that? Why is that there? And I feel like this movie did that to me at least twice.
Yeah. I think, and to kind of, I have two completely different thoughts here. Okay,
tell
so
them both.
First is that, so to take it back to Infinity War, for everything that happened, we don't need to discuss the film, we discussed it in an episode, but the bit of the film I enjoyed the most was the bit when Steve Rogers steps out of the shadows in Edinburgh.
Uh-huh.
And I had this feeling that I, you know, you get from sort of Christopher Reeve's Superman, that you get from Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman in certain bits of the film. I had this feeling of, it's going to be all right now. This is going to be fun. And he's here to save people.
Right.
Which ultimately is what, and it's not to complain about what they did with that film, because I think you do get to do that occasionally, but that is what you go to that kind of film for, is that feeling.
And so many of them don't have it anymore because, again, we go back to that happiness guilt thing. You know, well, we can't have a superhero who's just saving people. You know, they have to have angst. And I'm like, no, it's cool. I have enough angst. I don't need to see that. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. We go to certain things should be certain things. That sounds awful, but it's also
it's accurate and appropriate.
And we should be going to these films for certain feelings that we need. That's the job of entertainment. And too much entertainment doesn't do it. I have long rants that I go on over and over again about why storytellers are scared to portray heroes at the moment, because we do need anti-heroes, we do need villains, we do need to tell stories about flawed characters and evil characters and human characters. But myth exists for a reason, and we also need stories about heroes, we also need good times, we also need something that gets your endorphins going, and that's our job as storytellers, is to know when people need which one. And for some reason, in the last 30 years of pop culture, it's just become cool not to do that, and I think it's cowardice.
I do too.
I went on a rant.
No, and I'm totally on board with that, because in this climate, with all of the terrible shit that we turn around, I mean, it might be in our own lives, but it's definitely going on globally, and especially in my country. I just want to turn that off. I want to go to a movie when I have the time to go to a movie, and have fun. You know, I don't want to see my depression reflected on the screen in my superhero. Yes, there are certain instances where I do appreciate. I'm not saying you can't have a three-dimensional superhero. That's great. But they don't all have to explore all of this. Sometimes it can just be fun. And that's what I want to see. And I think that in this climate, that's what we need.
And I think that if DC made a film where Superman turned up and was Superman for even 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That film would make $3 billion in a weekend, because people want that. They don't know that they want it.
I think that's why Wonder Woman worked so well.
Because, yeah, I mean, the scene in the trench, that's why that resonates.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, that was definitely not a light scene. But it also It wasn't the level of angst that we've come to expect from a, you know, I'm with you. I'm blaming Nolan on all of this. But that's like, that set the precedent for what happened going forward. And we didn't have, you know, Wonder Woman wasn't sitting there wondering. Sorry. Thank you. About what she ought to do. She just did the thing she felt was right. And that might get her in a dark situation, and it might get her in a fun, quirky situation. But it wasn't about that navel-gazing introspection. You know, I'm almost going to go with, we have these literary superheroes, which I'm happy, again, I'm happy to explore all of this. But every once in a while, I just want the fun.
Yeah, I mean, the trouble is you need both. You need all of it. You need the full flavors.
Of course.
And we're not getting it. And I think Marvel are, to an extent. There are things they could do better, certainly, but they have been presenting
here. And they did it in their own Marvel way, which is definitely not as emo as the DC universe. But with Civil War, that was not a light thing. That was really a... They did it beautifully, don't get me wrong. You know, holding that mirror up and going, you know, I was just having a discussion recently about this where, you know, we were saying, you know, what side would we be on, that sort of thing. And you know, how does this fall, and how would you act in a scenario like this? And obviously there's regulations needed. And I'm like, you know I'm 1,000% Stark. I would have done exactly what he did, probably for all of the same reasons. Not only does the logical part of my brain go, we need a level of regulation for this sort of thing. You can't have, you know, people going unheeded and unchecked, you know, with this sort of thing going on. But also there's a level of his own personal, you know, in Iron Man, was it 3, where he really hits a level of depression and PTSD
totally what that film is,
right? And so he's coming out of that, and so he also feels a level of guilt on what's going on, so he wants to push that to a legislative body, right? So it's not on him. I totally
Civil War is totally Tony saying we need to be held in check, but really saying I need to be held in check.
Right. And you know, as anybody who has or has dealt with PTSD, like, this makes perfect sense, but it also makes logical sense from, you know, his character and his logic side, taking all, you know, mental issues away from that. So I know I would have acted just like him. But I watch that and I go, but I want to act like Cap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no question where I know what I do, but I know what I wish I would do.
And they have the license to do it, I think, because they try for the balance, because they try to... They do heroic films, they do dark films, they try and do a variety of films. And yeah. DC really hasn't at all, apart from bits of Wonder Woman. And that's, and as we said, that's, I think that's why that resonated.
Mm-hmm.
Factoring in the issues that obviously it resonated for women in a different way as well, because that's... That heroic imagery tends not to be women on him up until this point.
Since we've gone there, and how, this is a hell of a long intro that we're never going
to
use.
I'm thinking we might have to just put this out as an unedited episode, just to try and friction extra, you know.
Chantel was having a bad mental health day, so I called her to talk about Jurassic World. So you just said, coming back into the actual recording part of this, you know, it resonated with women, blah, blah, right?
Mm-hmm.
For Wonder Woman. I gotta say, as somebody who happens to be female, coincidentally, I felt more empowered as a woman watching Black Panther than I did as watching Wonder Woman. Because unlike, and Gal Gadot was wonderful and the film was enjoyable, but there was still that level of, and here's what I think it was. Be totally honest, we should probably not put this out. Wonder Woman acts from an emotional base. And, you know, everything was, she would act rashly.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely alongside of her moral code, which there's nothing wrong with. But she was ruled by emotions throughout that entire film. It all ended up basically well for her, but that bothered me. Then you have Black Panther, where the majority of the women who are in charge, I mean, honestly, Black Panther was almost a side note to, you know, his sister who invents and does all of this tech, and his mother who knows how to rule, and the general of his army who knows battle strategy, you know, and these three women and many more women were in more positions of power, and he couldn't have done anything he did without them, and came from a logical place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was far more empowered seeing these women in this role than this one woman who had superpowers. None of these women in Black Panther had superpowers, right? Other than their brain, which was awesome. But in Wonder Woman, you know, she has, I don't care about the skimpy outfit, you know, it's fine. She looks great in it. But so she has the skimpy outfit and she's just like, you know, I must act on my emotions, which, you know, what is the number one thing that men decry about women? You know, it's all about, oh, you know, they have a lack
of... Your thing with shoes.
No, carry on. That's also probably a good point. But it's you know, they have a lack of control. They're mm-hmm. too emotional. That's why they shouldn't be in, you know, in politics. They can't, you know, who knows, you know, depending on what week it is in the month, the, you know, they might make a wrong decision. You know, that's been the classic anti-female cry for so long. And to have a female superhero who acts purely on this emotion, I don't know how empowering that was to me. She just happened to have it all work out for her. And she made all the right choices. I'm not saying she didn't. But as far as which one as a woman did I more enjoy, feel, walk out feeling empowered by? Black Panther, mm-hmm. no question. Honestly, the one scene, it was the scene, the one they wanted to cut, the across no man's land scene that resonated mm-hmm. to, you know, with me above all the others in that movie. because I got that. You know, that was honestly, it was a cap choice, right? That's what you do in that situation, or what I would like to do. But the rest of it, you know, she was, I swear, it was like a space lord, right? That was the problem with Infinity War. He acted, you know, impulsively and emotionally, and that ruined the thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Tell me Wonder Woman wouldn't have done the same thing.
No, she totally would have done the same
thing. Right. Now, if a woman did it and ruined the whole plan, how do you think that would have gone over?
I just don't like... Well, I mean, I do like stories that do this, but in their place. I'm sick of the narrative of doing the right thing weighing down on you.
Oh, yeah.
And making it out to be, oh, you know, you can choose to do the right thing, I suppose.
But it's a problem, yeah.
But it's tough, and it's and you're going to feel bad about it.
No, whereas, generally no, the right just, thing makes you feel good.
Yeah, it's good to look yourself in the mirror.
Mm-hmm. That's what Michael Jackson thought.
Exactly.